Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. This morning I have one of my favorite guests on, Dr. Jane Orient, who is doing yeoman's work and one of the people who, doctors who is advocating for every doctor in this country because we are absolutely under attack. I had to have her on the show when I read her article about the congressional bill that's been passed by the House, which claims that it's fixed the doctor fix with the sustained growth rate, and it's all window dressing. I mean, you would think that the Republicans are on a doctor's side, and if you read this bill, it's a call to action for everybody in this country, doctor and patient, to stand up and work actively to defeat this. Dr. Orient, when you wrote this article, you opened my eyes to something called maintenance of certification, which we've talked about on the show before, but it was kind of a one-off. I mean, it was the boards who were, you know, trying to hype this, and we all know that this is a cartel at this point where they're making money off of doctors. But you, in your article, you tied these two things together, and I think my listeners really need to understand this because this is the end game, it seems to me.
The boards have been working with the Congress, and by the way, the Senate passed that bill yesterday.
Wow.
As well, I think they had 8 people voting against it only.
Oh, wow.
It's 92-8, something like that.
Oh.
And the bill is supposed to pay doctors for quality or value instead of for work. Well, it is the federal government that's going to define value, and they'll be defining the value of your physician partly based on whether or not he has met the qualifications for maintenance of certification. These are little hoops that the board set up so that once you pass your board exam, you're not certified for life like you used to be or like you would be if you were a lawyer, for example, mm-hmm. and passed the bar exam. They will make up exams that you have to take every 10 years and in some cases much more often than that. And these are designed so that you can't pass them without spending thousands of dollars on review courses where you memorize the answers that they want to obscure questions that will probably never come up in your practice. And they may not even be correct. You can't even find out what you got wrong or what the answers are supposed to be or have anybody else evaluate as to whether the board is even looking at the right answers.
That's crazy. I mean, that's it's like a big black box. And I read up on this a bit yesterday. I'm fortunate and blessed that I passed my boards the first time. And I was in that class that you don't have to recertify, so I'm technically board certified for life as well. But I read things about the pass rate has continued to go down. And there was a question, are doctors getting dumber, or is this thing really just designed to make people fail so they have to re-up and take the test and pay more money to take these review courses, and it's just a money-making scheme for these boards?
That's certainly what it looks like. The executives for the board are paid outrageous salaries,
mm-hmm.
probably 10 or 11 times as much as a physician who is actually seeing patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks as though the exams are designed to fail people. They're not asking questions that every doctor who's practicing needs to know and that does know. And it's just something, if you were board certified in 1 year, you're fine. If you were certified in the next year, then you're not fine. You have to take this exam all the time. And so one day before the exam results are announced, you could be practicing mm-hmm. and doing a great job. And the next day, you can't make a living because it announced that you failed the exam.
And it's arbitrary. I mean, this is a marketing. They haven't rolled it out yet, but do you foresee a marketing campaign where hospitals, where the government, where they will actively try to demonize any doctor who decides either not to take this test, not to, you know, they were certified, board certified, but they decide not to take it because they can't afford it, or they don't want to do it, or they just don't want to be part of the Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare train wreck, and they're going to try to demonize docs and put them out of business. Do you foresee an ad campaign coming down the pipe now that this bill has passed?
That's very possible. I mean, it's worse than demonizing the doctors. They may just bar them for being on the hospital staff, mm-hmm. which means that their patient can't have that doctor take care of them if they go to the hospital. Or they may bar the doctor from serving on these insurance panels. The doctor can't be in the network. So that means that if your insurance doesn't cover you if you go to see that doctor. And very likely, what you pay the doctor may not even help meet your deductible. Mm. Or they may have a separate additional deductible for out-of-network doctors. So they're going to try to convince people that doctors who don't comply with all their little requirements are not good doctors.
And it has nothing to do with the practice of medicine clinically.
Well, actually it does. It means that you are having to memorize the answers to the way they think medicine should be practiced. And a lot of these guidelines, so to speak, are set up by people who are in the pay of drug companies.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, the prescribed treatment maybe to use their drug instead of maybe not using the drug or using some other method.
You know, there's an interesting segue to that. There was an article that came out a couple of days ago about how the cost of pharmaceutical, the cost of drugs that people are buying has gone up about fourfold over the last 6 or 7 years, and really big time since Obamacare rolled out. So there's no money being saved, but as I predicted, pharmaceutical industry got a major boon from all of this. You have to buy prescription drugs as part of your HRA or, you know, health savings account. You don't get to buy anything over the counter. It, in some instances, has to be brand prescription drugs. So they've just now tighten the noose, basically, on doctors having the free rein to treat their patients as individuals. So we're talking, I read something about the independent advisory board for, you know, what's covered and how much gets paid. That's, it said it was dead, but is that true now under this value service, this pay for value, is that going to be resurrected?
Oh, that's the independent payment advisory board. I think that's still there, but they're going to have the majority of physicians' pay is supposed to go through these other organizations, alternative payment methods or
mm-hmm.
something.
Accountable
where
care.
The entity that's the APM, as they call it, will get the money. The doctor won't even get the money directly, and they will be calculating based on whatever they want how much a doctor's supposed to be paid. You can't make any more money by working harder.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be able to make more money by screening patients so that you don't have any sick people
mm-hmm.
because sick people who require more services will count against you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a way to discriminate against people, and it really is about saving money for Medicare. And Medicare can only save money by not paying for services, which means they won't be available, which means the patients will likely die sooner, and that means that will save money for Social Security too.
Oh yeah, it's a giant octopus. It's like it's a pay-to-play system, but it's based on rationing, and it's going to be the doctors doing the rationing based on these accountable care organizations. So the power
well,
of the,
if they don't, they're going to be out of business.
Exactly. So the power of the purse now is centralized. No, and, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, you've got this pocketbook from the government that everybody gets the access, but the only access that you have is if you don't do the service. And that's really what's going to be considered value-based according to the system. Is that a fair assessment?
No, or you will have, your all records will have to be in an interoperable electronic database.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the government gets all this information about you. And it can use this information to determine whether your doctor is doing what the government thinks it should do. You know, prescribing the drug that they favor, or not prescribing drugs in certain circumstances,
mm-hmm.
not offering surgery to people over the age of 75, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It's going to be the government having control over your life or death.
Who came up with this HR2? Do you know? This is the bill that just got passed by the Senate as well that we were just talking about. This sounds like it's some sort of, you know, scam from the the lobbyists, the various lobbyists, but who came? Was there actually a doctor who helped craft this thing, some sort of some Congress-based doctor?
Well, Michael Burgess has his name on there as the chief sponsor, and he is a physician, and we were really, really surprised. It's, and of course, the AMA was pushing for this.
Oh, wow.
I have to wonder why, except that it's going to have all kinds of metrics, value metrics, quality metrics, all kinds of methods for, like, risk adjustment to sort of compensate for having sicker patients or pretending to compensate for it. And I think that organized medicine is looking to be in charge of developing all of these metrics and selling them to doctors to help them, quote unquote, comply with the government requirements.
So you're basically saying this is an adjunct to the coding system, then. They're going to now sell us a book of algorithms, basically, of how we should treat various diseases that are approved and value-based so you can get reimbursed. Is that what they're planning?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are guidelines. There are hundreds of guidelines already set up, and mm-hmm. that sounds deceptive because then it's supposed to be voluntary on the part of the doctor. Yeah, voluntary. If you want to get paid, you will do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to get sued, you'll do it this way, because maybe we'll have protections against suing you if you follow our advice, no matter how the patient does.
What happened to, you know, restriction of trade? All of these things that happen, you know, that muzzle doctors, that put us in a position where if we want to stay active, if we want to practice medicine, we have to do these things. I mean, maintenance of certification is supposedly voluntary. After this,
they will say it over and over again that it's voluntary. Yeah, if you want to be on the hospital staff, or if you want to be named on this patient's insurance plan, you will be engaged in maintenance of certification, which, by the way, is more than just taking an exam. It's about constantly doing things in your practice to collect data and to pretend that you're improving something. And it means that the specialty boards, which are in cahoots with the government, mm-hmm. are going to be watching your patients as well as the doctor.
Let's break that down for 1 second. I know we're going to take a break in a minute. But when you say that, I want patients to understand data mining of information. It sounds very innocuous. You know, you do your history and physical, you take your family history or social history, no big deal. But when you're talking about getting meaningful use data, how deep does that really go? It's more than just, you know, your blood pressure and your weight, isn't it?
Well, it has to do with whether you're complying with the drugs that you're supposed to be taking.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there are all kinds of information about your family history or about so-called social history. And many doctors are now asking questions that doctors certainly weren't taught about in medical school, like, do you own a gun? If you own a gun, how do you store your gun? And this just gives the government all kinds of information. If they do decide that something your patient is doing is criminal, mm-hmm. for example, that they didn't know about, well, here it is right there in the medical record.
Exactly. And on that note, let's take a small break and come back. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today, Dr. Jane Orient is with us, giving us more detailed information about the future of medicine. I mean, this is a watershed event. We've been talking it's been the velvet rope, you know, the velvet chains over the past several years where they promise you money for voluntarily doing things. And doctors were given money for meaningful use, you know, incorporating electronic medical records in their practice, going through the stages of data mining more and more in order to get a carrot. This is just one more thing before it becomes mandatory, basically. I mean, I'm thinking back on all of the things that we used to do that doctors have voluntarily ceded their authority because of fear, because I don't know, greed. I'm not sure exactly what the mindset was of the average doctor to just go along. I've never seen any other profession be put under this kind of attack and to have the members just voluntarily do it. What is going on with the... it's not the AAPS doctor. Let's just be frank about that. Anybody who's a member of that association gets this and is not a part of it. But can you... do you know of anybody who's not an AAPS member who thinks this is a great thing for who's practicing medicine?
I think that a lot of doctors are saying, well, Medicare is better than some of these managed care organizations.
What?
They sort of gotten used to having an army of clerks in their office who are seeing to all this compliance things. So the doctor may see a patient for 5 to 12 minutes or something, but there are, you know, a whole bunch of clerks in the outer office, mm-hmm. and the doctor thinks that other people are taking care of us, and so he's maybe not too worried about it.
Wow.
But it's going to become more and more obvious. Like, when the government is concerned about population health, for example,
mm-hmm.
and doctors are trained that the system's thinking is, it's part of the maintenance certification thing, it's part of being a doctor, and they kind of get used to it. But, you know, I have enough trouble trying to figure out what's bothering my patient and how can he best be treated mm-hmm. without thinking about all the other patients in the United States. And the government may say, well, antibiotics are being overused and so bacteria are becoming resistant to it, so we're going to be making it more and more difficult for you to prescribe an antibiotic for your patient. So even if you think, yeah, this patient may keep your doctor from getting a really bad consequence of the ear infection,
mm-hmm.
you supposedly are hurting the millions of people over the long run by prescribing antibiotics too soon or for too many people.
So it's all about the good of the many outweighing the need of the few and the collective mindset of centralizing, you know, some Politburo, knowing what's best for everybody in the country. But, you know, it's always coming down to us as the physicians. We have the least power in this system. We don't do anything to fix the major problem. We're not talking about the food industry. We're not talking about genetically modified foods. We're not talking about anything that's actually impacting as well, probably that started the whole ball rolling, on the medical profession. Where is the uproar, the collective scream that, you know, it's more than the doctor. We're not the reason that it's so expensive. We're not the reason that people are getting sicker in this country. You know, we're doing our best to just stay afloat, most of us. And so it's, and, you know, maybe some doctors think this is a great thing, but I just read an article about how the suicide rate among doctors is higher than any other profession in the country and growing. You know, a 700% increase amongst female physicians. So I'm not sure everybody's so happy and, you know, they're putting themselves in a, you know, la-la land of just let's go along and get along. I think people are disheartened. They have been beaten down and they don't have a, they don't care anymore. You know, they're just basically punching a time clock. And that's tragic. And that will affect every patient in this country. I don't care if you're for Obamacare or not. If you have a doctor who's taking care of you, who can barely stay afloat, could care less, or is just concerned about making the next payment, then that's not a patient, doctor, you'd actually want to take care of you. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think doctors are beaten down. They're demoralized. Many, many of them are closing their independent practices mm-hmm. and going to work for hospitals where they will be doing what the hospital wants. They are punching a time clock. In fact, they're going home on time, and they become maybe 25% less productive as soon as they go to work for the hospital. They feel that they can't influence things, and so they don't try. And plus, if you do try and you complain about mm-hmm. this, things that are disrupting your practice or about the hospital policy, you can find yourself undergoing a sham peer review where, you know, they pretend to be seeing to patient quality, and all they're doing is trying to get rid of doctors who don't go along with the plan,
mm-hmm.
maybe who don't bring in enough revenue for them. And these doctors may find that not only do they lose their job at the hospital, they lose their ability to earn a living. You know, they've invested a huge amount of money and time in their medical practice. They can't really do anything else. They're facing poverty, destitution, disgrace, loss of their family, loss of everything they've worked for. And it's just not too surprising that a lot of them are deciding the only way out is to end it all.
And this is just tragic. And, you know, this mindset or this meme that there's not enough doctors to practice medicine, which, you know, you create this false scarcity. And then this is, you know, kind of bringing it home to roost because you're forcing, you know, the doctors out of practice into large institutions. I'm seeing this already in the emails and the calls I'm getting for coverage, hospitals that need coverage for ENT, for ER call and to help cover practices where they don't have enough doctors, not ENTs on staff. This is all manufactured by the power, or I should say the pressures on doctors to stay afloat. If you've left the profession or you've joined a practice, you now have a very small amount of capture of doctors who can take care of those patients. Now they're in a position they don't have enough doctors to do the work, and now they have to pay, you know, contract labor to do it. And I can assure them, it's not going to be enough doctors to do the locums at some point, and they're going to have to outsource, like they've been doing, from foreign countries, giving more power to physician assistants and nurse practitioners to pick up the slack. That's not going to get better. I foresee that is going to be the future of medicine. A few administrative doctors, just like the registered nurses, they also were decimated. They stopped taking care of patients, and they're now doing case management. So you've got the people who are the most... Go ahead.
Nurses are trying to figure out all data to put into the new electronic medical record system. You know, a new $100 million system that's replacing the $100 million system that they adopted a couple of years ago. The nurses are under huge stress to take care of patients. They have much less help. They have many more demands that take them away from the patients. They're responsible for mistakes that are much more likely to happen just because things have become so needlessly complex.
So
we're importing many nurses, too, from places like the Philippines. And many of these imported nurses, they may be very good nurses, but they have to comply because if they don't, they're gone.
Exactly.
So, you know, the idea is to get rid of independent-minded professionals and get people who are just acting like robots.
I think you said a mouthful, and I've said it on the show before. If you're coming from a foreign country into our system, they have you by the visa, you know. If you don't comply, if you don't follow rules, if, you know, if you don't do everything, jump through every hoop, you're gone. And that puts a lot of pressure on someone to go along and get along, not ask questions and just do what they're told. That's not the nature of medicine. I mean, that used to be. There was an individualized type of pursuit. It was about you and the patient coming up with the best way to take care of your patient that worked the best for both of you. That's gone. If you have anybody who's part of is getting a paycheck from somebody that they're not producing their own labor and they're not running their own payroll, you have to think twice about who stands to gain from this. What's their fiduciary responsibility? It's no longer to the patient. I mean, I've had issues where I've been consulted and they don't even know why they're calling the consult. They just were told to do it. And I'm getting called by people who don't even understand what the medical issue is that they're calling the consult for. And every time they do it and you do a consult, that's a charge to the patient. And I know you've probably seen this too, where people are, they're taken to an ER, but there's no coverage. So they get stabilized and then transported to another ER, and they get billed for every time they make the stop. So now you've just made it more expensive for the patient to come in and get care. It's just crazy, isn't it?
Oh, it just really seems to be insane. And this is not the American way. I mean, America was built and became prosperous because of people who were independent-minded and who were figuring out a better way to do things, not who were just constantly looking over their shoulder to see, what their overseer wants them to do, especially when the overseer wants them to turn the patients through, order unnecessary tests, not order tests that they don't get paid for. And increasingly, those who are really hastening their patients' exit from this world.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole... Let's talk about that. I know we have to take another break pretty soon, but that is something that, you know, it was brought out a while ago about rationing and death panels, and people got emotional about it. But ultimately, are we not speaking about rationing and death panels where it's about the cost center and it's about the disease that you have being so expensive and that outweighing the good of the many, that kind of argument, and so you should just be made comfortable and like it? I mean, I'm seeing that mindset of it's okay for euthanasia and it's okay to euthanize people who are otherwise viable. These things seem to be, these bioethicists are taking over. I'm hearing things too about post-birth abortion, all sorts of bizarre stuff that has nothing to do with medicine. It sounds dystopian, to put it mildly.
Well, all this stuff about end-of-life care is maybe about ending your life as a verb. People are being sent to hospice who never would have been sent there before. That used to be for people who had terminal cancer. More people are going there who have post-op complications, who have chronic lung disease, who have heart failure, that really could be expected to live 5 or 10 years with just meticulous, ordinary type of care.
Mm-hmm. And they're getting younger too, aren't they?
I think so.
I mean, that's...
I think we're going to see the life expectancy going down. But of course, the government has ways of not keeping accurate statistics.
Oh yeah, just like they're telling us that Medicare and Social Security is solvent, right? It's creative accounting.
Yeah, we'll be solvent for maybe five or ten years.
Well, I'm going to make a provocative statement. Maybe that's why they are having so many people come in for immigration, because they're looking for bodies to pay for this system. On that note, let's take a small break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're talking today with Dr. Jane Orient about the future of medicine and how the government has really become a Bigfoot, stepping all over the practice of medicine and the doctor-patient relationship. Now, maintenance of certification is one thing, but is there something called maintenance of licensure also that's out and about?
Right. Well, maintenance of certification is supposed to be voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
That you, if you want, but of course you have to do it if you want to be on a hospital staff. But there is a push to link that to licensure. Like now, if you lose your certification or you just don't sign up for these tests, you can still practice medicine. You still have a license. But the Federation of State Medical Boards would like to make it so that to have any basic license to practice, even to do house calls or to keep your own small office open, you have to go through maintenance of certification. Now, this automatically creates the problem with 25% of physicians now practicing in this country who are not board certified to begin with. They may have had, may even had a 5 years of postgraduate medical training, but they never took the board exam. Mm-hmm. They never got around to it, or they were in a fellowship program and they never got around to taking their basic board certification. They would automatically be unable to practice, and that means unavailable to take care of patients simply because they don't meet the requirements of the board, and they're in a position now where it's not possible to meet it. There aren't enough residency slots. Even if they were going to go away from their practice and go into a very poorly paid residency position, there aren't even any positions available.
Well, partly because they're filling them up with foreign graduates who the medical schools, I think, get paid, and the residencies get some sort of stipend to take these guys in. Is that also a pressure that's keeping doctors from practicing?
Oh, I think so, but they also, the federal government puts a lid on the number of training slots that can be offered, and then they may be filled, as you say, for a medical graduate.
So again, we have a system that instead of it's being free market, where the pressures drive it, it's artificially controlled, where you pick winners and losers, and you create this false lack that you can manipulate. It's the same scam everywhere, it seems to me, whether it's the oil industry, whether it's, now it's medicine, that they're bringing online to, you know, under this Affordable Care Act, tax the bejesus out of people. I think there are, you know, the regulations are, I don't think we can count how many new regulations there are now in there, but the bottom line is people are going to be paying for something they'll never get. And I thought this was a Ponzi scheme, and this is getting worse, because now we're actually removing the underpinnings of it by taking doctors out of play. And it's tragic. I mean, they're paying, and I'm sure you've read this too, that they're paying 1% more for end-of-life discussions, you know, for E&M codes. That's the office visit codes. You get paid more to talk about someone ending their life and putting them in hospice than you do to talk about how to save them.
Well, you know, this is supposed to be voluntary too, isn't it? Like the doctor's maintenance certification is voluntary. Mm-hmm. Well, the patient signing an advance directive is supposed to be voluntary too. But there's a lot of pressure on them to do this, and it's not really being presented to them, honestly.
No.
Like now there's a bill being considered in the Texas legislature that over and over again talks about artificially delivered nutrition and hydration, which means food and water. And this is being called life-sustaining medical treatment. You know, if you get it through a tube, a gastrostomy tube, you could live for years. Mm-hmm. If somebody just puts something down the tube, you know, maybe mm-hmm. it's dinner that's been put in a blender and puts water down the tube. They're trying to get patients to volunteer to terminate simple food and water.
Wow.
As a life-sustaining treatment. And, you know, of course, this is also comfort care, because dying of thirst or starvation is really agonizing. And they are pretending that, well, you won't even feel it.
And for those of us, those out there listening who think this is not true, there's something called the Liverpool Pathway in the United Kingdom, and that's one of their weapons against patients, and they were called out on that. And I think they might have stopped it now, but there was definitely, you were being paid by the hospital, as a hospital, for ending the life of patients and by starving them and dehydrating and withdrawing their water. I mean, this is like, pets don't get put down like this. I mean, this is just...
No, they don't. They called it the Liverpool Care Pathway.
Oh, care, sorry.
But it really was the Liverpool Death Pathway.
Oh, exactly.
Because everybody's going to die if they don't have any food and water.
And one doctor wrote an article about this, watching a patient go through this, how really just agonizing it was to watch that. Well, imagine being on the other side and being the patient. And I've spoken with Dr. Singleton a couple years ago, who told me that even though you sign an advanced life directive, you know, you sign a living will, that they can just ignore it. They can meet with bioethics panels and decide whether or not you get morphine and made comfortable, or they actually do what you asked for in the living will, which is to do everything to save your life. They get to decide that, and they just ignore the family.
Well, they could decide that the care is futile. And they define futile. And it could well be that the care would save your life, but it's not going to restore you to normal health.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be able to work and pay taxes.
Exactly.
You may require somebody to take care of you. Even though you may be alive, you may be very alert and able to experience life, at least if they'd stop the sedatives that they're pouring into you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say this is all perfectly voluntary. We're just doing what the patient said, or we're just not doing things that would be futile and just a waste of resources for the good of the whole.
See, this is where I have many issues with it, but one of the main ones is the family is out of the loop. They don't tell the family when they make these decisions. They just do it. You know, so someone's coming in, giving your family member medications with the IV, unless you ask, what's going on with that? You may not know what they're giving you. And someone told me also that, you know, they went away on vacation. When they came back, most of their patients were gone, you know, down some sort of, morphine pathway. So this is an active process. And if you think about how Obamacare is set up, Medicare, when that new law that went into, I guess about a couple years ago now, that if you readmit someone within 30 days with the same diagnosis, the hospital won't be paid. You were talking about active pressure to discharge people faster, keep them out of the hospital as long as possible, and if they're in there, make sure, sounds really kind of creepy, make sure they don't come back. It's sick. It's actually...
They won't come back if they go out through the morgue.
Exactly. That's what exactly
I don't
my
know if
point.
It's been your experience, but, I mean, a number of doctors had the experience of patients who really would be okay if you would do normal things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are patients who may seem to be out of it and, you know, incompetent and so on and unresponsive. If you give them some water, they wake up.
Yeah.
And they talk in a perfectly rational way. Or if you stop snowing them with morphine, they wake up. And, you know, then they can cough and move around, mm-hmm. and they don't get blood clots, and they don't get pneumonia. If you just give the people too many sedatives, you might as well be killing them, because, you know, you've got to be able to cough and deep breathe and move, or you're at really high risk of getting a fatal condition.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's iatrogenic, you know, medically induced complications. You know, that's something that we need to take a critical look at as physicians. You know, I mean, we talked about this on the show before with you. These doctors don't necessarily take the Hippocratic Oath anymore. So they don't have the same mindset that doctors who trained, you know, 15 years ago, for example, do. I can't do harm to a patient. I took an oath not to do that.
You know, the new things they call a Hippocratic Oath don't even have that simple thing in there.
That's crazy.
And then, as you mentioned before, the families are out of the loop, and one of the consequences of having doctors owned by the hospital and, you know, the patients taken care of by hospitalists and their own physicians can't come to the hospital is the family can't even talk to the doctor. The doctor is really inaccessible. Even if he does speak English well, or even if he's a very competent doctor, he's working for the hospital, he doesn't have time, and he's not willing mm-hmm. to talk to the family.
Or you get one of the, the resident physicians, I forget what they're called, doctors, who take call in a 12-hour shift. So they're just covering, just maintaining until the next shift comes on board, and there's no continuity of care. Another thing that happens for folks who are out there listening, when I get a consult and I ask the doctor or the physician assistant who consults me what the problem is, I can't tell you how many times I don't know, I'm just covering. That's what they tell you. This is not medical care. I mean, you really, really want to stay out of the hospital at all costs. If you can, stay out of there, because it's not a situation that's going to, for the most part, help you. What they will do, though, is shove you full of vaccines. They will do their typical workup, you know, put you on, antibiotic, the one for MRSA, drawing a blank on it now, but, you know, all these toxic antibiotics, just in case. They put you on a diabetic protocol, even if your diabetes is under control. I mean, these million-dollar workups that end up, I think, padding the bill, but never really helping the patient, and there's no thought involved.
Well, they'll do the workup that they get paid for,
yeah.
And they will not do anything that they don't get paid for. and so that you may be deprived of tests that could save your life, all the while you're undergoing things that churn revenue for the hospital. You know, the hospital has an interest in, and for some reason those things are on the guidelines and are well paid.
It's true, but they're not useful. And there's no thought involved. This one size fits all. And, you know, I think that we as doctors have more power than we, just like American citizens, everybody out there has more power than they give themselves credit for. You know, I want to see, and I understand there's a doctor, Dr. Tierstein, I think, who's making a new board certification process for internal medicine, because they're just tired of being, you know, reamed by the internal medicine board. Maybe we should just withdraw our consent. If we don't do it, they can't make us. You can't make us do this. Let's just do that. Why can't we do that?
Well, they can't make you do that, but they can make it impossible for you to practice medicine. And it's our opinion, really, and it's been since 1965, although people haven't been listening to us, that if you take their money, they're going to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
The only way out, really, is to not take their money, which means that you've got to opt out of Medicare. And you would say that, and that's the only way that doctors can continue to take care of elderly patients, that they can bring in enough money, and the money that they have to bring in can be a whole lot less if they aren't employing four or five coding specialists or compliance specialists for every doctor who's actually seeing patients.
Oh, you're absolutely right. So independent practice really means opting out of Medicare. But let's take it a step forward, because as Medicare goes, so does commercial insurance most of the time. And, you know, we're going to take a small break, and then we come back. I want to expand this, because Medicare is the underpinning. I want to know from your perspective if commercial insurance is going to do the same thing. On that note, let's take a small break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Before the break, I was asking you, Dr. Orient, whether you think that commercial insurance will do the same nonsense as Medicare. All of this, you know, meaningful use nonsense, these parameters that you have to meet. The maintenance of certification in order to be allowed to be on the panel of a commercial insurance, not just Medicaid and Medicare anymore.
Oh, of course, it already is, and many physicians have commented that the commercial insurers are even worse than Medicare. But what a lot of people don't understand, especially those who think, well, it'd be all fine if we could put everybody on Medicare,
mm-hmm.
have the government in charge instead of these bad insurance companies, is that these same bad insurance companies are the carriers for Medicare. They are the contractors who are actually running the system. They are the ones who have been behind the scenes drafting the legislation. They helped draft Hillary Care, Clinton Care. They drafted Obamacare. They drafted a lot of the things in this supposed SGR fix.
Mm-hmm.
They are the ones who are making money from the electronic health records, from setting the standards, and, you know, from skimming off probably 40% of the healthcare dollar before it ever gets to anything you'd recognize as related to helping patients get well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at who was on the Clinton Healthcare Task Force, or you look at who is getting these government contracts, it's all the big five insurance companies, especially United Healthcare, mm-hmm. and all of their subsidiaries that are into this data management and data mining. They're the ones who are in charge. It's a public-private partnership, and the commercial insurers are really they're the ones who are making the rules and enforcing them and collecting tons of money.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And what you said was absolutely on point. There's something called Optum, which is one of United Healthcare subsidiaries, and they've got it coming and going. So, I mean, between the ICD-9 and coding to when Medicare and commercial insurance folks get admitted, they have to go through a process to make sure you're admitting them with the right designation, inpatient, outpatient, or observation. And Optum owns a company that you go through, that the hospitals go as a middleman through, to make sure that the doctors put the right admission designation on the admission. So now you have a third party just to admit your patient that's going to take money, you know, that you have to pay into, and they get to take it all under the umbrella of UnitedHealthcare. That's
well,
gotta be the
people
most...
People seem to want universal coverage, that being uninsured is a bad problem. In fact, I think patients need to wake up to the fact that so-called insurance coverage is part of the problem.
Oh, absolutely.
That you are pouring tons of... You're throwing money out the window every month when you're paying your insurance premiums. You may not get any care at all when you really need it. And if you weren't paying for the insurance company and you were paying the doctor or the laboratory directly, I mean, the amount would be far less than what you're just throwing out the window. We should price medical services in terms of monthly premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And you would probably figure out that in most cases, you would be far better off to pay for it yourself and not give these guys their cut off the top.
That's what we need to do, is spend our time now educating patients about that fact. It's cheaper not to use your insurance than it is to access it. You know, catastrophic is one thing, and if you really need catastrophic care, that's what it really should be used for.
But you can't really buy a good catastrophic-only policy, and Obamacare has made these even less available than they were before.
Oh, I agree.
You can't get insurance that qualifies for the mandate unless it covers all kinds of things that you're never going to need or want.
Mm-hmm.
And that is has all of these administrative costs built into it.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we're recommending that the best, safest way, the most economical way, is to be uninsured.
What about the medical cost sharing strategy?
Yes, and medical cost sharing is a wonderful idea, and it exempts you from the individual mandate. Samaritan Ministries, there's Christian Care MediShare, there's another one, the name escapes me.
Liberty Health.
But these, I love being a member of Samaritan. Every month I send a check, which is much smaller than I'd send to an insurance company,
mm-hmm.
to a family that is paying a medical bill. And all these insurance parasites are not getting a cut of it.
And you know, what people don't understand is, you know, companies like Samaritan, like MediShare, like Liberty HealthShare negotiate a discounted rate with these hospitals. If their cost structure was so rigid and it really costs this much to run their system, you wouldn't be able to get 70-80% off the bill by just saying, look, let's just make a deal. I'm going to pay you cash and you cut me a break. And they're happy to do it. This is it's a house of cards. They don't even put their charges up on any database. You can actually shop around and make an informed consumer choice. They don't want that. They want this to be too scary, too big. Why bother? This is bigger than you. Just do it. You know, as long as we do that, and I don't care what it is, voting for these people in Congress, not taking responsibility for what we put in our stomachs, it's on us. If they don't have, nobody has our best interest at heart at this point. I don't see anybody working for me as a doctor, as an American citizen, as a human being at this point. So we have to take our power back. What you just described is a way to do that. Not carrying health care coverage sounds, my God, it's really crazy, but it's not. And if you did something like a supplemental insurance like Aflac or Mutual of Omaha, where you actually got coverage for being in an ICU, for having a catastrophic illness like cancer or heart disease, you actually would come out ahead, would you not?
Absolutely you would. And if you, there are some things like critical illness coverage.
Mm-hmm.
They just pay you a certain amount of money if you get a certain diagnosis. And you can spend the money the way you want. You don't have to go by the guidelines.
Exactly.
Patients do not understand the importance of having an independent physician. I don't care how many wall hangings a physician have. I care about who's paying him. Because it is becoming increasingly important to have a doctor who really cares about you, who is only being paid by you, whose paycheck is not at risk if he deviates from the guidelines.
Exactly. And you know, the quality of care, not only do you get an a much higher quality of care. But now you're in a position where you can think outside the box. You can do naturopathic things, holistic things. You can fix the problem and not just put a Band-Aid on it with a medication. I take real offense at this point to doctors who don't think, who just throw another medicine on the pile to take care of a complication or, you know, a side effect of another medication. You shouldn't even call yourself an MD or just a drug pusher. And any patient who comes out sicker than when they came into your office because of what you did, I just don't believe you should be practicing medicine. This is now a two-tier system, ultimately. You know, what we're just talking about for the last 45 minutes is reality as it stands now. But it is a two-tier system. What we're just discussing now briefly is how to opt out of it. And it's better, it's cheaper, with more choice. How do we get that message out to folks? Because if they knew this, every time I talk about medical cost sharing, people are like, oh my God, I didn't know it existed. Why didn't I know? And as soon as they know they have a choice, their whole mentality changes. They understand that they can take responsibility and win. How do we get that message out there?
Well, I think radio shows like yours, it helps to inform people about that. I think that they are really beginning to get angry that when they go to the doctor's office, the doctor's punching numbers into a computer. Mm-hmm. One complaint per customer, please. I think a lot of them don't realize that the medicines that they're getting a lot of times is what's making them sick. But I've had the experience of talking to doctors saying about, you know, side effects of the medication may be much worse than we thought. And they say, well, we don't really want to know about this because we have to follow the standard guidelines or we'll be in trouble.
Oh, gosh. Then why are you a doctor? That was might be my next question. I can't respect that.
Some of the most prominent physicians in the community, and I just can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Well, we have to follow the guidelines.
Wow. Well, you know, maybe we should take more of a commando approach, because I believe that doctors who say that should not be practicing, because they're not physicians. They are just agents of the government.
They may be the only kind who are going to be left if the government succeeds in driving independent doctors out of business, which they will unless the patients understand the importance of having their own doctor and who are going to give their business to the doctors who are caring for them rather than sucking it into the Optum, United Health, mm-hmm. Blue Cross, all the other people who are working in collusion with the government.
You're absolutely right. It's about patient-driven healthcare, but the patients have to drive it. I mean, I think I'm in a position, I'm not sure where you stand now, but politically, AAPS has been on the forefront of fighting everything tooth and nail. You guys must have been up on Capitol Hill more than any other physician in this country. And is that worth it to you? Do you think that you've are making a difference? I mean,
I think that the Congress is totally owned by special interest groups, and that both parties are the same, as we just learned with the passage of the so-called SGR fix, mm-hmm. which is, I would call it, sustained global rationing. And it's doctors are going to be paid less than they were, than if just the sustained growth rate had gone through. And the only answer is for physicians to stop taking their money, go back to working for the patients. You may bring in less revenue, but you'll need less to pay your bills if you don't have all of this administrative overhead. And it's the only way that you can ethically practice medicine. It's the only way that you can practice medicine at all, as opposed to just being a robot.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That's what we need to do. And, you know, for doctors who are listening to the show who don't know how to go about doing that, how can they reach out to you or AAPS? Because I know direct pay practices is something that AAPS really champions. I mean, I've spoken with a lot of doctors who are doing it and are happy that they're working smarter, not harder. How can we reach out to you?
Well, you can come to our website, aapsonline.org. You can sign up for our free email alerts. Our next Thrive, Not Just Survive workshop will be in Raleigh, North Carolina, June 5th. And you can see on our website, aapsonline.org/freedom, the videotape presentations of many physicians who have escaped being on the third-party treadmill and who are joyfully taking care of their patients at a very reasonable cost in a very ethical way, and they are enjoy going to work every day.
And that's exactly who I want to take care of me, someone who loves what they do and are not muzzled and are able to do what they've been put on this earth to do. And I know you got up at the crack of dawn to be with us today, and I want to really thank you. It's a blessing to have you on, and I really appreciate your time, always.
Thank you so much, Dr. George.
All right, get some rest.
I shall do that.
Thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.